But at this stage, the staff is still busy with the finalizing of the first draft. And in my mind, you know, when they come to the committee, it should be in prime condition, the report. So what we will do, we will give them more time this week and probably deal with that next Wednesday or Friday, depending on the progress in this week. So I just want to alert members. That means tomorrow morning at 9, we will only have one item, and that will be the A-list of the protection bill. And that won't take, I think, even more than 20 or 30 minutes. We will have the legal advisors from the SAPS as well as the civilian secretary to brief us. We'll go through the A-list and then make a decision. So that will be the only item for tomorrow. So I just want to, so it will be an early day tomorrow for members. Then, members, there's three issues in the public domain I think we as police committee must just reflect on, and I just want to refer to it and I also give an opportunity to members to raise those issues. The first issue is that we saw on Thursday and Friday public unrest in Northwest Province. I think it was important for the police to stabilize the situation, and of course they will have to keep an eye on the situation there. It's also important that, again, crime intelligence should ensure that there's proper information available for the police to plan their various operations. And once again, from the portfolio committee side, we call on the community to act within the law and also call on the police to arrest anybody that is involved in lawless or action or destruction of property or private property. So that's quite important. But the police will have to keep a watching brief on that matter. The second matter is the incident that happened at the soccer in Durban. And really, we want to really express our utmost disgust with the actions of members of the that was in that stadium. There was also certain comments made yesterday by Mr. Irvin Khoza with regard to the police. Now, we also saw last night that the acting provincial commissioner in KZN indicated that he's going to investigate the matter. But there were serious concerns raised by SAFO regarding the police in attending meetings and also operational issues. But it's going to be important also for the provincial acting provincial commissioner. You will have to come to this committee to give us that report so that we can see whether the police indeed play their role as envisaged with regard to the planning of big events. That's going to be quite important. Of course, it also relates to the issue of private security, and that's, a matter that will also be raised during our hearings here today. But it's quite important that that matter be thoroughly investigated and the findings be made available. And if there was any negligence by the police, that rectification steps are taken as soon as possible. Then, members, the third issue, we saw yesterday that 12 people were arrested in the Kruger National Park due to poaching. One person was killed. I think we commend the South African Police and National Parks for the action, but what is very worrying that one of the persons that they've arrested is a member of the Skukuza SAPS police station. Now, that is really a big disappointment, and I think we again call on SAPS management, especially crime intelligence, that all police stations adjacent to the national parks should be vetted, properly vetted, because the fact that they have again arrested a member of SAPS is not good. So it is indeed, there is indeed collusion with criminal agent entities within the poaching environment. So we again call on police management to deal with that as a matter of urgency. So I'll allow members also just to reflect on that issue. Honourable Kola Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, indeed. I was being contacted by a number of people in Northwest. Families in normal suburbs were suddenly barricading themselves in their houses and sending out frantic messages, save us, save us, because huge mobs of people were descending on homes and they'd already torched, you've seen all the pictures, they've burnt so much up there. And people were thought they were going to be burned to death in their homes. And I was reassured by the National Police Commissioner that troops were being sent in, that public order policing units from all over were descending. But I think what has been missing is information from the SAPs to citizens who were just thought they'd been abandoned because there was obviously not sufficient police, there were no police in sight, and they were terrified. So perhaps revisiting the manner in which the SAPs broadcasts what, you know, that they're on top of a situation or about to be on top of a situation, there's some way they need to be able to communicate with the citizens. And I think we can't have people cowering in their homes thinking they're going to die. It's just too terrible. Certainly the reports on the policing at the football, apparently the person in charge didn't pitch at the first number of meetings, and so just arrived on the last day and took over. And I agree absolutely. I think that report must come here. It's the result has been not only mayhem and burning of the stadium and trashing of an iconic building in KZN, but also those visuals went global. People all over the world are now saying, what on earth? How did they ever hold the FIFA World Cup in that place? Never again. And that's the sort of impact that those visuals have. And finally, the Kruger issue, yes, involvement of, sadly, involvement of people in authority is an issue, but I think we must all realize that while the National Police Commissioner, sorry, I'm pointing there because he was sitting there, he told us he had personally been in charge of getting the poaching under control in Kruger, that the poachers have now moved to KZN. And it's a daily occurrence now, and no one ever goes to jail. If they're arrested, they bounce through those courts, they're given a tiny little bail, and off they go back overseas and they bring another guy out. So it is a massive issue to do with magistrates and courts, so it may well look as though we might need another justice police meeting with a view to looking at that issue alone. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Mshlongo.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, with regard to Moses Mabhida Stadium, chaotic situation, I think, to me, when I saw the destruction even of property, TV, cameras, and the assault of, there was a man was lying down, kicked on the face, literally kicked on the face by those bullying guy. People not even scared that this is a highly monitored area in terms of camera system. You know, it's on the national eye. And without necessarily seeing an active involvement or action by public order police, and also that thing actually raised a serious question, because to me that crowd wasn't really that much of a very big crowd. Those people could just be easily contained if and only if there was an arranged kind of security to protect even the soccer officials and the property. It could just be easily contained, because it wasn't something of a very big scale. One could actually see. Otherwise, if it was of a big scale, the whole stadium would be flooded by these people. But you could just see that it was just a kind of a movement by a smaller group of insane people who, according to me, I don't know whether if you destroy property it will make your team win or what. So it's just nonsense. It's something that doesn't make any sense to any reasoning person, because to be a follower of a soccer team it doesn't necessarily put you in the decision making. If they don't want the coach, the owners of that club are the ones who are expected to take decisions about the coach or management of the team. So in essence, it actually described the type of a society that we are having as a nation of the Republic, that at times we fail to actually give sufficient thinking to our action. Moses Mabhida is one of the world renowned stadium. Its beauty is not just only a stadium. It has got even some facilities that are of the world class. Now, just to be vandalized like that, it raises a serious question, particularly for no obvious reason, because one cannot simply say that if your team loses, it has got any bearing on you, like, for example, the question of poverty, etc. Something just which I think... But it raises, Chairperson, a serious question, even as you raised the question of capacity of private security in terms of crowd management. You know, for those few people, quite a number of people should have been arrested, because, you know, if people actually then do things like that without actually being dealt with by the rule of law, people will actually then see the country as just a banana republic. At times, the authority of the state must just be felt and seen to be put in action to curtail such activities. It was completely, completely lunatic to me to see such actions. When it comes to Kruger National Park poaching, with one officer being caught in that process, I think, Jefferson, this thing tells us a lot. My concern first goes to the personnel division of South African police. You know, if the HR department, particularly that one dealing with the personnel, is failing to stamp authority of discipline amongst police, it will be very much impossible. Because if one tends to look at things, some police officers today, they seemingly they don't have this thing of that do's and don'ts. We expect South African police to be the ones that protect. By the way, thanks to the action by those members of South African police, because for the fact that these people, that police officer was arrested, it means the security there in the Kruger National Park, supported by South African police, actually then managed to pick that activity and managed to put into action measures to get those criminals under control. But the question of lack of discipline within South African police service, it will need us to relook or revisit the question of HR. On these minor issues, as it has happened even on the question of abuse of women and all this, the question of KGB, to me, it wasn't fully well explained by South African police, that it would take IP to actually get a person removed, a person sentenced for about 10 years, still on the payroll of South African police. It's not on. It tells you that then you get some excuses that, no, it's because the man refused to sign. If a person refuses to sign, does it mean that he can refuse to sign for more than 20 years, still on the South African police payroll? It doesn't actually make any sense. I think the HR division of South African police will definitely need to be relooked at and they're reinforced in order to ensure that discipline, those do's and don'ts in the South African police are well adhered to. Well, lastly, the question of Northwest Chaos, I think, Chairperson, it's a pity that due to a lack of some of us to listen to the cries by the people. Because when you have got leaders who see themselves to be a law unto themselves and helpless people on the ground, realizing that their cries are falling into the deaf ears, it causes these unexpected chaos, unfortunately, to me, which doesn't also make sense, because now when you begin to loot shops and target even the foreign nationals and all these things, it becomes a simple criminal activity, whereby then a genuine issue gets clouded by lawlessness, which ends up losing in the public eye the support it deserves. But the main issue here, when you have got a man like the man who's in charge of that province, reported even to be buying cattle to give to somebody else, at a tune of 1 point something million rand, and you expect people to actually say hooray. I think without any actions by people in authority, well, I understand the new leadership has just been in office, and happy to also to realize that there seems to be a willpower to actually then deal with that particular problem, because the people of Northwest have long been crying about that man. The man who sees himself to be an all kind of authority, who is even able to go out to the public and say, I fear no one. How can you say you fear no one when you are doing illegal things? Not even illegal, simple illegal things. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the chaos at the stadium, I'm not very sure or what is the stadium management supposed to do, because the security guards that I saw there, they don't seem to know anything about crowd control, because they were instead also throwing chairs in order to defend themselves. So it's very clear that they don't have any idea of crowd control. So I think we also need to look into what the private sector need to be doing. We are always blaming our own, even if maybe sometimes it was not, I mean, I'm not saying it was not their area, but they are not the first detachment to deal with the situation. Maybe they are the second one. So we also need to check on what are the other responsibilities of the stadium management themselves. In terms of the Kruger National Park, if I heard correctly from the news, it's not only one police officer from our side, but also a retired Frelimo commander in full uniform. It means if maybe there's collaboration between our police and Frelimo, then we're having a bigger problem there. And my understanding is that three people were shot dead. And if it's three, it means there was a mini war there. It means somebody was shooting back. And if that would be trained soldiers from Frelimo and our own police who are trained, then we will have a bigger problem. In terms of the Northwest, I think we mustn't make a mistake of getting into the politics of Northwest. We must talk about what we as the committee, what is within what we can do. Talking about the politics of Northwest under G won't help the committee itself. Let's at least deal with what we can do and leave the other ones to whoever, because we can't do anything about it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Any other member? Honorable Bailey.
Thank you, Chairperson, and apologies for my late arrival. I had a unplanned, but the meeting planned for later moved to 9:30 this morning. I think I caught the tail end of the discussion, but certainly on the Moses Mabhida riots issue, it's quite clear that whenever there is an uncontrolled outbreak of public violence like that, it speaks to the understaffing and under-resourcing of the public order policing, and we got some of the stats around that situation last week. The fact that the POP units are at least at about half minimum capacity, if not slightly less than that. And so that's in real time. But I think it also speaks to the fact that there's completely inadequate planning. And I think it would be useful for the committee when we engage SAPS management to find out what are the details of that operational plan and if it was adequate to cover all eventualities. I mean, Mabhida is a huge stadium, and you know, it's not child's play to police to police that number of people for an event that big and that high profile. And my understanding is that the same deployment of police officers was also assigned to cover another one or two events or venues simultaneously. So they were very clearly overstretched. So we do need to get some detailed clarity from SAPS management if their preparedness was up to standard. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Mulabatsi and then Honourable Mabhija, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of Moses Mabhida Stadium, I want to say even the clubs that are featured there need to also provide adequate security, not only SAPS. And on the issue of the Kruger National Park, this actually confirms the concern that we've been raising for years that there is collusion of SAPS member and the poachers. The fact that there is SAPS member arrested, it confirms. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mabhija.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to how I perceive the whole thing concerning the Moses Mabhida problem, is that even if we can have 1 million security guards, those guards, they are not going to change the mindset of the spectators. So the playground up to the stadium where football is played is a play. It's not a place to fight. And if you can check, those people were just running around like a cockroaches on which doom was spread. They didn't know precisely what is it that they want to do inside the stadium. So it means somewhere, somebody, some people must come up with strategies to change the mindset of the masses of South Africa. Because just imagine, if I want to take a camera that I don't even know how to use it, if I just pick on something and hit a security, the security that is supposed to make me feel secured, and I'm hitting, attacking, it means there's something wrong. So whether police or security, that is, I don't think that is a question. We cannot be always tiva kamu. We must change the mindset of South Africans. All those things, they belong to them. Moses Mabhida Stadium belongs to us as masses of South Africa. Even the players, we stay with them. Even the security, we stay with them. Something must just be done. And if it's not done, then lawlessness is going to continue, and this South Africa is just going to end up without any football, because it will force people to cancel all the football clubs, because now it's grooming a hooliganism. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. You covered. Thank you very much, members, for that input. It's quite important, three issues that we will have to monitor going forward. So thank you very much, all the members, for the input. I'm going to ask the members to introduce themselves. I'll, of course, give Sira, after the day briefing, an opportunity also to respond to the issues regarding the private security environment regarding Moses Mabhida. Honorable Molobatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Hey, thank you.
Dolibuwa, mchemeza mshumo, ndine mabeja libuwa, ndi mrado wa committee ya chikolisa. Dolibuwa.
Hi, I'm Diane Kolobana, member of the committee.
Hi, I'm Philip Mchongo, member of the committee. Good morning.
I'm Jerome Mage, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sanabonani Kamuza Kelembele, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. We'll ask the acting chairperson and director to introduce the delegation, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Tandwa Ngubane, the acting chair of ESIRA. I'm with the committee member, Mr. Zwile Zulu. I would like to extend apologies of the other two board members who couldn't make it today. That is Major General Phillipson and Mr. Mady Oliphant. May I hand over to Chair, to the Director to introduce the management.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Mr. Chauki, welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to honorable members. Chairperson. The delegation for management is with the CFO on my side, Mrs. Mukhudi, as well as the head of stakeholder in the office of the director, Mr. Matsumela. We have the other two executive chairmen. Matters of the audit currently that they are busy with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We welcome the delegations and also the cost-saving measures in keeping the delegations as small as possible. That's appreciated. Members, of course, the agenda point is the budget and the annual performance plan. There was a good analysis document circulated. I think all members received from Nicolette. Thank you very much. So we'll go immediately to the presentation and over to Sira to commence with that. Thank you.
Once again, thank you, Chairperson. I'll quickly go straight to slide number 7, with the main policy focus areas for 2018-2019, which is a critical presentation that we're making today. And then I'll hand over to the director to take us through the presentation. The critical thing for us for this calendar year 2018-2019 is the issue of reviewing of the funding model, especially the Guarantee Fund and the Levies Act. You'll note in the CIRA Act, Chairperson and honorable members, that under Chapter 2 of the Act, under the functions of the authority, number Q, it stated very clearly, the Chairperson, that CIRA must establish a guarantee fund for the private security industry, which is managed in the prescribed manner. I think the issues that are discussed here by the committee members, especially related to the unfortunate incident that Moses Mabhida, does bring into a focus the issue of this guarantee fund. When one observed watching on TV, I no longer go to stadium because of the previous unfortunate incidents, because I still value my life very much. But when I watched on television and I saw the security guard being kicked, it became clear to us that CIRA will postpone this matter for too long, because the question that came to mind, how is that person going to be paid for the cost of the hospital? If that person had passed on, who was going to guarantee that the family are going to get the burial benefits? So the issue of the guarantee fund for this financial year and moving forward is a non-negotiable for us, and we are committing ourselves that this is the issue that we'll pursue and ensure that it's established. It's been on the table for too long. It's there in the Act passed in 2001, and it's very critical that the committee support us and always prod us in terms of where it is moving forward. The director will speak much on the Levies Act when they do the presentation, because it also has to do much with the delay in terms of the amended Act, which was still making a play that we do need support. And since I joined CIRA last year, this is an issue that has been on the table, and we're told that it's sitting on the desk of the president. And I'm getting worried whether even that desk is still there, you know, where this Act is sitting. But we're hoping that it will soon be addressed. We have also embarked on the organizational review, and we have already contracted the service provider who is going to assist us to ensure that as we move forward in terms of our vision, we are aligned to the broader ambition that we have as an organization. But it means that we need to restructure ourselves and ensure that we do know where we're going. But these are things that we cannot do just through injunction. You also need to do proper systematic evaluation of where you are as an organization. And this OT process is going to more or less tell us more about our capacity and where do we more or less need to beef up as we move forward. Again, the issue of the review of the training on the standards. You'll note also on the same Chapter 2 of the Act that under K is clear that it states that the function of the CIRA is to take such steps as may be expedient or necessary in connection with the training of security service providers and prospective security service providers to ensure a high quality of training, and in particular, and then it lists issues like accreditation and withdrawal of those accreditation, monitoring and auditing of the quality of training functions performed by the accredited persons, the participation in the activities of other bodies or persons entitled by law to set standards in respect of training of security service providers of bodies entitled to formulate, implement, or monitor skills development plans for the private sector industry, the appointment of persons to monitor and assess achievement or outcomes in respect of standards applicable to training, the determination and accreditation of qualifications required by security service providers to perform particular type of security services, and the taking of reasonable steps to verify the authenticity of training certificates presented by person for the purpose of this Act. The reason, Chairperson, I've gone into detail to quote the Act is because as a country, we've been discussing these issues of skills across the board. since the passing of the Skills Act in, I think it was 2000. But it's also a zero enjoined a space, especially in the area that we're involved in terms of making sure that we do make this happen. Hence the engagement we've had before with SASITA around these issues. But again, I think it was the Honorable Ndlongo who raised the issue of the quality of the training of the security guys that he observed on TV, whether these guys were well equipped to deal with the incidents like the riot that took place at Moses Mabhida, and other observations that we do make at SIRA in terms of the fact that who does provide this training and the quality that is involved around it. And those are issues that we do want to bring on the table, and we are also committed in this financial year that this is a space that we also need to manage and make sure that we do according to the Act. But this is an engagement we have with SASITA, but we are taking full responsibility in making sure that we also drive this process moving forward. The next issue, Chairperson and Honourable Member, is the issue of capacitating our law enforcement program. And our focus and our ambition is to make sure that we reduce the inspector applicable business ratio to 1:120, probably moving it to 100, as CEO will clarify on this one. But the one area that we are more concerned also of is around the issue of the individual security guards. And currently the ratio CEO is 1:6,000.
1:6,800.
1:6,800. It tells you that it's something that is definitely is totally unacceptable in terms of how we do that kind of monitoring, and it's an area that we need to also focus on. But this obviously depends on a number of issues: the resources, how do we manage the first part that we deal with in terms of funding model, because these things you need to have resources in order to build your capacity in order to deliver on them. The other part is also the issue of the sector, of the industry sector committees. We're working very hard in terms of now making sure that we do get, we've set up these committees. Now we've also made a call to make sure that we do get people who are experts and also professionals who chair these sector committees. But obviously we'll also be inviting people from the industry to sit in these committees, but we guarantee that people who will be chairing them are people who are not conflicted in terms of also being involved in the industry itself. The issue of the transformation is also a priority to us. Although we have suspended it for this year in terms of implementing the next phase because of budget, but we want to make sure this doesn't disappear from the radar again, because the problem with all projects like this is that you come with a report and then you step back because of the budget, and then all of a sudden we've forgotten about it and then you start afresh. We do not want to do that. We are still pushing very hard. We are hoping that the funding model that we're putting in place will assist us in terms of plugging that gap of funding. Unfortunately, for this financial year, we do not have funding for it. And we'll continue, Chairperson and Honourable Members, to raise the flag around the issue of SITA, of SIRA brand, because that is one area that in the public we are working very hard in terms of stakeholder, and also the public to understand that what is our role, what is our legislative mandate in order to make sure that we continue making people be confident that we are an entity that serves the needs of the public as per the Act and of the Constitution. I would like to hand over to the CEO now to take us through the whole presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Director, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the Acting Chairperson. Chairperson, let me take the committee back to the overview of the presentation quickly. Chairperson will be looking at the strategic overview of the organization, which will touch on the mandate, the strategic goals, as well as the objectives. I will deal with Program 2 and Program 3. The CFO will deal with Program 1, and she will also deal with the medium-term budget as outlined in Part C of the presentation. Perhaps for a start, Chairperson, let me indicate that we have reviewed our strategic plan in line with the National Treasury Framework, just to make sure that we are aligned in terms of the smartness of the criteria that we need to follow when we're dealing with the APP. You will notice that in this current year, previous year we had four strategic goals. the goal number four, which was the private security industry stewardship through research and development, has been removed. So we have removed it. We have catered for it in strategic goal number one. So we currently have three strategic goals. If you look at the objectives as well, we used to have about eight objectives. We've refined those objectives to about seven. And again, it's to be in line with the smartness and to ensure that we adhere to the issue of being able to define the indicators properly and with accuracy in terms of how they should be measured. Chairperson, the mandate of the organization has not changed. It remains the same as the mandate as it was in the Act. In the main, we are promoting the, we need to promote legitimate industry. Also to ensure that the industry act in the public and the national interest in the interest of the industry itself. To also determine and enforce minimum occupational standards, make sure that there is transparent, fair and objective timeless registration within the industry, and to ensure that we actively monitor and investigate matters that come before the industry for such investigations. Of course, paramount also to our mandate is to ensure that the needs of users of the private security industry are taken care of. So that is in the main the mandate. As I've already alluded to, we have defined the goals to three goals, which I think I may not need to repeat, Chairperson. There's also strategic seven strategic goals that we have refined. We've removed only one and just refined the one into the others. I will hand over to the CFO to do program one in terms of the APP, and then I will then do program two and three.
Thank you, Mr. Chauke. CFO, you're welcome.
Good morning. We are on page 10, the overview of the program. We are responsible to ensuring effective leadership, strategic management, and administrative support throughout the organization. The sub-program of program one is finance and administration, business information technology, and human capital. Slide number 11, we under finance and administration, we still kept the two KPIs, unqualified audit opinion over the 3 years. We aiming to have a clean audit. We have put measures in place. We have internal audit. We have audit action plans. We also have a internal audit action plan aligned to AG audit action plan to ensure that our internal controls are improved. And then also on revenue collected, we want to intensify our collection. We have revised our debtors collection policy. We also have partnered with state attorney to improve our debt collection to minimize material impairments. We included, as the chairperson indicated also, that we now elevated our guarantee fund. It's now in our APP so that it's properly monitored and achieved timelessly. So in terms of our program, we want to have the concept finalized this financial year, and next year we want to start establishing it. Under program, sub-program two, we have business information technology. We want to, we used to have one part of our disaster recovery plan under IT. Now we're moving to eliminate the risk. We want to have the holistic one for the organization. We also elevated it to our APP so that at the end of the financial year, we have a fully fledged business continuity and disaster recovery plan to ensure that we minimize the downtime and be able to recover if such instances materialize. And then on the other sub-program, we have human capital. We have the performance measurement to ensure that we achieve all these targets as indicated in our annual performance plan. We also have training to ensure that we improve and capacitate our employees to deliver effectively. And we also want to have our in-house internal training academy for employees now, not for our stakeholders, but we're starting inside for this financial year So in the next financial years, we will have our in-house training academy to empower our employees.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of Program 2 is law enforcement. The purpose of the program has not really changed, Chairperson, to ensure that there is effective regulation as well as the enforcement of compliance with the regulations and the law in general. And it's got three sub-programs. One is enforcement, two is compliance, and three is legal services and prosecution. In terms of the first sub-program, Chairperson, there is about nine key indicators there. The first one being the inspections of businesses. You will see that we have marginally staggered the increment in terms of the targets over the years, and the reason for that is that this may change in the outlying years as we beef up the capacity in terms of doing inspections. On the number of security officers to be inspected, we have increased to 32,600. On the number of investigations, you will see that we have marginally also increased, and the reason for that is that in some of these areas, we expect that there should be a drop in terms of the prosecutions that we do, but an increase in terms of compliance. So as in when we step up compliance measures, we should see some good results. The criminal investigations also, we are anticipating that as the compliance goes up, there should be also less and lesser cases that we should be laying against service providers. In terms of the number of security businesses that are licensed to possess firearms, we also have increased just marginally. I think, Chairperson, there we will also review that as soon as we get full access to the database of CFR. Recently, we attended the MINMEC in which the minister has asked us to ensure that we do another audit as we did in 2013. You would recall that we had the National Firearms Summit in which we presented that audit. We'll be doing another one. So it will step up the target automatically because we will have full access to the database. The next one is the number of non-compliance companies prosecuted. As I said, Chairperson, although we anticipate that that number should drop, we've marked it at 90 as opposed to 93% because as we enforce compliance, there should be lesser and lesser people that we are prosecuting, so it should work the other way around. In terms of collection, Chairperson, this is a new indicator. We've got three new indicators there. The draft regulations. Chairperson, the reason we've got two and three in outlying years, we have embarked in the past two or three years on research, and we've come up with about three sector reports, about six sector reports in terms of research, which we intend to revise some of the regulations in terms of the various sectors of our industry. So we're looking at doing the first two in the first year and then three in the outlying years and so on. In terms of debt collection, as the CFO have already said, for the first time we are now litigating against people who are owing CIRA. We've partnered with the state attorney, and I must say, Chairperson, to a large extent, the program is just picking up success. We are seeing a number of admissions of debt that are agreements that are signed with CIRA through the process, and I think Gauteng is doing very well. We still need to step up some action in the other provinces. The number of security businesses inspected using DOCS, Chairperson, is also a new indicator, and we've outlined previously the reason that we are placing much more focus on this area is that there's been a widespread allegation that some of the DOCS are not properly trained, which places a major security risk for our country, because some of these DOCS are meant to sniff out drugs, they are meant to sniff out bombs and all sorts of things in our national key point areas. So we'll be stepping out, monitoring on that aspect. In terms of Program 3, Chairperson, Program 3 deals in the main with the issue of communications and training, as well as registration and training, and also includes the research area. Chairperson, the first sub-program is the issue of stakeholder engagement. We are stepping up the awareness program, which we believe that in the past 3 years, Chairperson has done very well in terms of making people aware what the regulator is and what the work of the regulator is. So far, we can see that through the complaints we're getting and the activities that we're getting in terms of our enforcement activities, so that works very well. In terms of the registration, Chairperson, we were averaging 15 days. We are planning to average 12 days. We can also say that in the nearer future, depending on the technology that we deploy, we can also get to less than 5 days, up to a 1 day in terms of registration. And we will explain that later when we come to the questions, Chairperson. In terms of industry training, Chairperson, there's a number of capacity building activities, and really here we're talking about training the service providers in terms of the issues that they need to be complying with in the industry. And I think the acting chairperson have also alluded to the review of that environment aggressively so that we're able to ensure that there is full compliance in terms of training standards and the standards that we want to put. The second one, chairperson, is the training providers that are accredited. You will see that the target, the baseline used to be 400. The reason we have 200 in that year is that we are increasing. This 200 is totally a new number. So basically, the baseline should be 400, moving up to 600 in the next coming year, and the new ones in the outlying years. In terms of research, Chairperson, we've also stepped out the number of research topics. We've reduced it to 3. In terms of the surveys, we've kept it to 4. And the reason for that, Chairperson, we still have to plan adequately around the funding of the research. You'll recall that the research department was initially established through donor funding, and we then took over for the past 2 years. So I think in the outlying years, we will step up and increase that research department to be much bigger. But so far, I must say that it's doing very well. If you monitor our website in the next coming month or two, you will see there will be a lot of literature. Certainly, we'll be living up to the mandate and the plan that we had a few years ago when we said that we want to be the center of excellence in terms of the literature regarding compliance and regulation in the private security industry. We've done quite very well in terms of the research. Please go to our website and see what we've done in the next couple of months. There is a few documents that we'll be publishing, including surveys that will be very helpful for users of private security industry. Quite very detailed documents, Chairperson. And that is it in terms of those two programs. I will give over to the CFO to deal with the budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you. Slide number 24. We projected our MTF budget. We indicating that the average growth over the MTF is estimated at 7.5, which is mainly projected through annual fees and administrative fees. Annual fees at 50% and admin fees at 47%. And we also want to highlight that our funding model has now become redundant, as the chairperson and the CEO indicated, that if you look at our average growth of revenue collection as compared to average growth of expenditure, it's 13% versus 7.5. So we are almost forced to come up with something very quick, because if you look at the 13% and 17.5, it's half, 50% above. So if we don't come up with something, we might run in issues of going concern. And the next slide, we highlighting where our cost drivers are. As a service-driven organization, you can see that our main cost driver is 59% employee cost, which is the distribution. It's detailed the distribution at 55% under law enforcement and 32% under finance and administration and 13% under communication. And we also have 37 internship, and which are 19 at law enforcement, 13 in finance and administration, 5 at comms. And then we also indicating that we also have rental costs at slide number 27, rental cost at 35%, which is we now have leases to expire in Pretoria, Bloemfontein, Polokwane and Spruit, and we're planning to have another office at Mpangeni, so it's factored in our budget. And then slide number 28, we're also indicating that we have traveling costs. It has decreased by 9%. We're planning to intensify our cost containment measures. As you see today, we have a lean delegates that are attending this portfolio. We're also managing the people that are going to one place. We want to know what they are actually going to do at that place. So we trying to maximize and we deploy only when it's really needed. And then stationery and printing, we have decreased by 30% decrease. We now trying to also manage where we, like after we have the registration has happened in Durban, I'm making an example, and we don't send those source documents, we scan them and they're delivered in head office. So that we are able to keep the records there. We're no longer shipping them or posting them to head office. Also, the telephone and Diginet, we have agreement with our service provider. We have kept our data at a certain point, and we're monitoring it on a monthly basis, so we're not becoming over the data that is given to us, because once you are over the threshold, you pay more. So, but we've been managing it, but we also want to manage it further. But we don't want to lose, because if you now lower, then you're paying for something that we are not utilizing. We try to be very close to what is required. Advertising, it has increased, because if you look at major key project, we're saying we want to have a brand of Sira being published, being visible, the last major key item there. And then because we are also, I'm on page slide number 29, security costs, 22% increase, offices, new offices need more security, so it's one of those things. And also because we have cash management, we collect cash, so we also deployed contracted cash management services, so they are adding up to those security costs. Water, electricity, it's also operational cost relating to new offices. And also in Cape Town, water has increased by 1 liter is 26 rand. So it's one of the things that contributed to the 4% increase. And under other items, we have an increase, which is professional consulting, training standards, and organizational development, as mentioned in the first slide by the chairperson, and maintenance of new offices. And just to give members more clarity what is under other, we have audit fees, AGSA audit. We have also our internal audit covered under there. Audit, they've also conducted an interim audit so that they can prepare us for the final audit. So it's one of the things that it's a key cost driver, legal fees and depreciation and workshop and seminars. Those are the items that fall under other expenses. The next slide, number 30, we just flagging the contractual obligation that we have for this MCF period. You can see we have rental, we've got printers outsourced, we've got IT services, security, cash collection, employee wellness company that is we have, outsourcing of travel services and fingerprint verification, and also an internal audit company. So on slide number 31, we have flagged our establishment costs, so which is we need to capacitate our new offices, even the existing office to be efficient. We have employee costs, we have training, we've got information system, we have furniture and equipment and operational costs, municipal costs and security. Those are the establishment costs that we have catered for over the MTEF period. Slide number 32, we have cost containment measures. We minimize traveling, as I indicated earlier. We reducing the number of people traveling in one place. We're using internal venues and other available government venues so that when we do our consultation service programs. And then when we appoint a consultant, we do a skills gap analysis and to check whether that consulting service cannot be dealt with internally. And then we also have a spend manager, is the one that is helping us to minimize data so that we don't go out of data bundle. And you also, we use our internal in-house official to configure the system. Maybe here, if I want to explain, like if we have an issue of not classifying a person who comes and renew and come and who have lost certificates, so we configure our system ourselves without going outside. So we have expert skills in-house to configure our system to make our data valuable. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Is that the presentation? Anything to add?
That is the presentation. Jefferson will add as and when the questions come.
Thank you very much. We'll go to the questions. Firstly from my side, and then we'll go to the members. The first issue I want to raise is that the acting chairperson also referred to the Amendment Act. Now, I just want to know, did the CIRA board or the executive, did they meet with the new Minister of Police? Did they raise this issue with the Minister of Police to intervene with the Office of the Presidency? I just want to get the indication, because it's 4 years, 5 years, this term is nearly on its end and there's no movement. Can we just get an indication? The second issue relates to the whole flurry, and we also raised it with the management of police, is the cash in transit heists. It was also over the weekend the 20 million matter, and it seems in that environment it's continuing. Now, of course, there is liaison between your members. I just want to know from a proactive point of view, what's being done from CIRA side, the organized industry and SAPS to address that matter? Because it also relates to, because a lot of your members are injured, even killed, in those interactions in some of the provinces. And then the last issue, the Moses Mabhida, can we maybe get an indication? Are you going to review, or are you going to make recommendations to your industry to review the current model that is governing big events after this event and the role of private security and your interaction with police? Can we get maybe indication? Are you going to review it? Or what is your view? Honourable Molobats.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question, tell us about the three research topics be completed during 2018-2019 financial year. The next one, tell us about the proposed establishment of the internal training academy. My third one is on your SWOT analysis. You made mention of the identity fraud by foreign nationals desperate for employment as a threat. How do you hope to address this? My last one, on page 16 you speak of the use of dogs. Whose dogs will this be? Will it be SAPS dogs or yours? And if it will be yours, how will you be transporting them, seeing that they only use specialized vehicles to be transported? And also, they need special handlers. How will you go about it? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Malabansi. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In slide 13, you are talking about the internal training academy established and operational. When was it established? And can you please give details? what are the, my second question, what are the primary areas identified in the annual training plan? My third question, please indicate how gender equality is promoted in the security, in the private security industry. My last question is in slide 30. You are telling us about the contractual obligations. You are saying we are going to outsourcing of travel services, outsourcing of internal audit. Why are you outsourcing these two? And don't you have enough capacity in Sierra? Thank you.
In fact, it's not a question. I just want to indicate that on page 7, when I saw that the organizational review and redesign to review, organizational review and redesign to review its structure to ensure adequate capacity. And I heard you saying that you've already got a consultant to do that for you. I had a problem because my administrative understanding is allergic to consultants. But then as we go down on page 32, I found that it is indicated that the appointment of consultants to be done after analysis of needs and diagnosis of the skills. I'll tell you why I'm allergic to consultants. In most of the cases, you see, that as you sit here, we can see what you are doing and you know what you're doing and you're capable of what you're supposed to be doing. And when you get consultants, they don't precisely know what is it that made you to seek review and redesign. They just do cut and paste. Maybe with you as a private institution, maybe it doesn't happen. But in departments, we fight cut and paste from consultants, and you give them half of your budget. That's why I was worried, but I got an answer here at the back. I just wanted to ventilate because I was so cross here in the beginning. But page 32, calm me down. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bija. Honourable Bona.
Thanks, Chair. A couple quite straightforward ones. Why the 49.7% increase in personnel expenditure? I mean, your personnel figures are not in the APP, so tell us what they are. I mean, if we're talking a small number, you know, 49.7 looks enormous and it could mean two people. So I'm not sure what that refers to. The consultants issue, I think you're going to be dealing with. My colleagues covered that. What is that about? Your 8.4 million rand overdraft, speak to that and what the status is. I'm presuming this is the overdraft to cover the mess that you had previously. Is it coming down? What's the situation with that? But why have your assets decreased from 115 million to 96.9 million? Where is that? What did you get rid of, or what's the decrease there? There's a little line called provisions. It's gone down from 8.17 million to 1.83 million. What provisions was it providing, and to whom? Not sure what on earth that is. Two more. Speak to this drafting of regulations. There seems to be an indication that the Secretariat is actually mandated to draft regulations. Are you working with them, or are you trying to do it yourself? Are you using consultants to assist you? What's the situation there, and what's your relationship like with the Secretariat?
And finally, you say you've done 140 public awareness campaigns, but I'm telling you right now, if I go out anywhere in the street, in the corridor, nobody knows you exist. What are these campaigns, how are you running them, and perhaps that in itself needs a review. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kalabana. Honorable Mtlungu.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. Mine will be first just a bit of a silly question, because Chairperson, the business will not always be moving on a straight line. There will be ups, straight and down, depending how is the situation unfolding in the country. Say, for example, if you collect more, have you thought about some forms of investments for the future? In the event you get into a situation of a crash, what plans do you have when the business seems to be booming on your side? Do you have some investments in order to put it as part of your future shock absorbers or what? Then, secondly, is the question of training. That is the question of allocation decrease from 51.1 million to 42.1 million from 2017 to 2018 now, which was at 51.1, 2018, 2019, 42.1. What informs this kind of a decrease? Don't you think that maybe, according to what Chairperson has outlined in terms of cash and transits and all this, something of some form of budget allocation to training needs to be increased, or what? Can one maybe get some kind of clarity? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mtlungu. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question of clarity, just to educate myself. The inspection of docks. I'm just wondering how that is done. If I could be educated there. Do you have specialized people to check whether this dog is trained for drugs or for whatever? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Remarker. Honorable Mbele.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just three questions from my side. Yeah, the first one is in relation to slide 27, in terms of the footprint expansion with the opening of new offices. I was just curious as to the reason or the factors influencing the decision to open an office in Empangeni, in particular, because I mean Pretoria, Bloem, Polokwane, and Northbridge are fairly obvious as being the sort of the largest or main cities in those provinces. But Empangeni stood out partly because I grew up close to the until I was 5 years old, but also because it just seems a bit tangential. I don't know. All I can think of is that maybe because of the Richards Bay harbour nearby, there's lots of companies contracted there, and maybe there's a need to be close on sites. But yeah, that just came up for me. Second question relates to maybe to kind of follow the lead of the acting chairperson in quoting from the Act. So Section 35R of the Act governing the authority provides for the regulation of the use of certain types of equipment by security service providers in the rendering of a security service. And it's just a question that occurred to me because I don't think the committee has ever interrogated or had it ventilated. I know that obviously in terms of the use of firearms, private security companies would have to comply with the Firearms Control Act. Now, I'm not sure if this issue falls under the purview of Firearms Control Act, or if it's something that CIRA has covered in its regulations, or if there might be a bit of a vacuum or a lacuna around this. But what is the regime and what is the sort of governing framework around the use of pepper spray and tasers by private security companies? Because although those aren't lethal weapons, my understanding is that they can be quite dangerous but also effective depending how they're applied. So I'm just curious about that. And then lastly, my third question is on the aspects of interaction with and cooperation with SAPS and indirectly the NPA, which is to ask whether the authority is satisfied with how their investigations that are referred to SAPS, as well as the handling of prosecutions for those cases over the past period, and if there are any shortcomings, what those are that the committee might be able to assist. I think this committee is going to be finding itself dealing a lot going forward with issues in the SAPS NPA interface. And it would be useful if there are any of those issues that affect the authority's work. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Onbele. Let's then go to the board, Deputy Chair and Director, for responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also honourable members. I'll address about three of the questions, one asked by you, Chairperson, on the meeting with the Minister. In the 16 months that we've been here, we've met with all the three ministers and we've raised this issue. And we're hoping that it will finally go ahead. That's the one.
So you've also met with the new incumbent? Yep.
Yes. And then I'd also like to, on the question asked by honorable member around the issue of the consultant, I know that was a comment around the issue of the consultant. I want to say it's always a double-edged sword, the issue of the internal work when it comes to old organizational development, whether you outsource it or do it internally. I'm sorry, I'm going to make an example about my other life when I was working for government. We were doing an OD in this department internally, you know, and in this light, I didn't see my name in the new structure, you know, and I was sitting there. And you can imagine how I felt because this was done by us. So it's always a complicated thing, especially when it comes to issue of the review of the organization. But obviously we didn't have capacity internally here at CIRA, and we've done proper advertising, and we got an organization through a proper process to get somebody to do this job. And we hope that we'll get the results. But my point is that it's always complicated when it comes to issue of reviewing the organization and you do it internally because people tend to be inward looking instead of looking at the organization. It's a bit complicated. There was issue of the research raised by Ms. Molema, the issue of the research. My colleagues will go into details, but our ambition around the research and why we set up this research entity is because there isn't much that you can find in terms of documents that are written in terms of the private security in the country. There are few UN agencies that have also done some work in this regard. But you do not have also even scholarly work that informs us in terms of what do we mean by locksmith, you know, vis-a-vis somebody who cut the keys. And policy documents and research documents do assist us in going that forward in terms of informing the public. But what we are engaging with SACITA and also with one or two universities, given the volumes, as the CEO has indicated, that there's a lot of good research work that has been done. We want to engage with a National Research Foundation in terms of setting up a research chair around the issue of private security, so that we can also encourage young students who are studying to start informing and doing proper research in terms of private security, because it's quite a big space around the world. And unfortunately, we've been reactive as a country in terms of how we handle it. And we hope that one day we'll produce academics that will assist us in terms of being informed exactly what do you mean by the private security space globally and also in South Africa, and also influence the documentation around this industry. So that's where we are currently as an organization. May I hand over to the director?
Yeah, can I just have a follow-up on the one response to Honorable Mabija's question regarding the issue of consultants? And we need to ask further questions on that. If you see, for example, what happened recently in the SAPS procurement environment. I just want to get an assurance from SIRA that the processes that was followed in procuring those services were done in terms of the normal bid process. Whether those institutions that was given the contracts, do they have the necessary industry-related grading in terms of SACWA or other institutions? And then, is any former members of SIRA or the board attached, or is there any third-party relationships between those institutions? We need to get a direct answer on that. We don't want any surprises. So if you can just give that undertaking or assurance to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just zoom in into that answer? Chairperson, maybe let me also give the context to why we're doing the OD, which will answer the... Chairperson, there's a number of paradigm shifts that we're actually taking as a regulator. One of them is to establish a guarantee fund. One of them is also to expand and fully deploy what the mandate requires us to do. If you look at the mandate in terms of the Act, we're not fully doing what we're supposed to be doing. Thirdly, is that we're doing a lot of research into various sectors of the industry, which I will also explain. But we're coming up with research kind of findings, which says that we need to be doing a lot more regulations. And we also need to be doing a lot more, we need to be building a lot more units within our law enforcement structures that will be dedicated to deal with those specialized areas of law enforcement. Now, the reason we are actually doing an OD is that if we were to actually do the entire mandate as it is, because over the years we've been running a skeleton. For instance, if you look at the 2 million security officers we have on the ground, as well as the 27,000 companies, we only have 60 inspectors. Now, obviously, that number is nowhere to match the number of what we need to be doing. So we need to scale. So we need to be looking at what proper structure we need to be looking at, and how many inspectors per kind of company. We talked about the ratio, and what are other units that we need to be having to fully do that mandate. So obviously, when we look at the establishment of the guarantee fund, we'll need a certain skill sets that we are going to be looking at. So the entire OD will be looking at that whole paradigm in terms of the regulations, the amendments in the Act, and as well as the deployment of the Private Security Industrial Levies Act. So we are actually anticipating that we need to be moving to appoint certain skill sets that will enable us to do all those work. We've actually already started training our management as well, Chairperson. We've sent them to partner with UNISA, School of Business. they're doing now executive programs, almost all the managers. We'll send the first 15 tranche, the other one who's going next year, and then we've got also some level of training also out for executives. So there is a proper shift and succession planning to that kind. So that's the reason for the OT. But in terms of the procurement of the services themselves, it was a competitive bid, a fully competitive bid, where the experts in the field have been invited. They came and pitched for it. They came and did presentations. So all full, from specifications to evaluation to adjudication, as well as the end, was done. There was a pre-budget. There was no. In fact, in the end, there was an issue as to why it should take a year, because we looked at it as not something that we need to do hush-hush. We looked at a proper full organizational development review of the entire organization, because it has never been done in the past 10 years since this organization was established. So it's a fully fledged section. There are no members of CIRA that are in there. We should have identified that. Unfortunately, at CIRA, we are very rigorous when it comes to issues of procurement. I don't think there's any family member that is there, I don't even know who the directors are. I can't even recall the name of the company, except that, look, we have approved. So, yeah, so I think the entire procurement is overboard from where we are. But we are willing to address any questions, Chairperson. If I may get on to the... Okay. The board is not involved at all, Chairperson. I think if I were to highlight this, the board is involved at the point where they need to be approving the budget, because there's at CIRA, unlike other organizations, you will be surprised, Chairperson, that the CEO can only sign up to R1 million. So any budget above R1 million goes to the board, but the board does not get involved in that. So that's how prudent we are in terms of managing the resources that we have. Let me deal, Chairperson, with the other issues. The Chairperson has asked maybe also to give an addition to what the Chairperson has said regarding the meeting with the Minister. We have already, Chairperson, met, and we've highlighted to the Minister the need to have the Act movement on the Act. And to that extent, I've already met also with the Civilian Secretariat. We have initiated a process where to make inquiries currently with the Presidency as to where the process is, and to try to move. I'm due to meet with him anytime soon in the next 3 weeks. When he's back, I'm informed that he will be away. Chairperson, so there will be movement in that respect as well. On the issue of cash in transit, Chairperson, maybe let me first highlight that we are obviously not happy with what is happening out there in terms of the number of people that are killed. You will recall, if you look at the media space, we are commenting about it. We're not happy with the some of the issues that we see there. But in the main, what we have done as CIRA, Chairperson, remember that there are three kinds of institutions that are, involved in here. We've got the Arms Conventions Committee that actually deals with the standards in terms of the vehicles. We've got South African Bureau of Standards that deals with that. We've got, I think the Reserve Bank deals also with some of the standards required in terms of the transportation of valuable objects and so on. From CIRA side, and we've got the Transport and Bargaining Council that deals with the remuneration and the pension fund and everybody that transport money in that sector. So those security officers that are involved there do not fall under the sectoral determination, so they are fully under the Transport Bargaining Council matter. We deal with the training of security officers. We deal with the accreditation of those and the registration of those security officers. We are also, mandated to deal partly with the standards of the vehicles and equipment that are used in that. You will recall that part of the Amendment Act that's sitting with the President currently is that we wanted to take over the power to also come up with standards that will see us improving the standards, first of all, also including that environment is only currently reserved for the few companies because the standard is not really controlled. So we are moving into that space. But what we've also done, as part of our focus on the sectors of the industry, we've done the research already on the cash in transit. We have a document. It's now, I think, past the validation. if I'm not correct, it needs to go to council. So we will be publishing it. We've also done the draft kind of policy around that. And what we want to do that, but I'm not privy to those findings right now. Chairperson, I do have them. I can even share them. But we haven't publicized it outside. But we've done the verification. What we want to use it for is to look at the areas from an empirical point of view that needs to be improved from our side as the regulator, because we are aware that there's quite a lot of bodies that work in there. So we now have a picture from where we're sitting as the regulator. So you should be seeing some of the regulations coming up in the future. And maybe whilst I'm still on that, Chairperson, let me also deal with the question of the regulations that we are doing. As I said in the beginning, that we were looking at sectors. Now, we have researched a couple of sectors, including this one. We've researched the private investigators. We've researched the electronic sector. We've researched the guarding sector. We've researched the dog and animals handling sector. We've researched a couple of them, including this one. So the aim is to inform the regulations that needs to be in that space and how we should review. Remember that these regulations that we have currently are regulations that were done immediately after 1994 and 1995, 2001, and so on. So if you read them, you will see that there's much more focus on labor kind of issues, so relating to security officers, other than actually the specific areas of the sectors themselves, because at the time they were not privy to any research. So that's the reason behind where we're moving. I hope, Chairperson, I've also killed two birds with one stone there.
Just
a follow-up question, and this just crossed my mind when we're talking about the security officers. A picture came to me when at Moses Mabhida, when that violence erupted, I saw security jumping those, So I'm just asking myself, because in most cases securities, they do not have guns. They have those knob-gears. And they were just jumping, going there confidently. And maybe what could have happened if there was somebody of those hooligans with a gun and start shooting? Are they allowed to have, or do you have a policy for them to be protected as far as having a barking vest, protective vest, and guns? Because they are seated at the gate, some of them, of government clinics and so on, but they are so hopeless. Even the one who fell down there and they were busy doing as they wish on his body, he was hopeless. He couldn't protect himself. So do you have, is Sarah the one that decides to come up with a policy to protect these people? If it's you, did it ever cross your mind to give those people to have a policy that mandates companies, security companies, to buy vests and guns for their subordinates to be protected wherever they are? Because they were just going like this, you see, with their chest out without a gun, and it's so pathetic.
Right, thank you, Member. If you can just include that also in your responses. Thank you, Director.
Chairperson, can I deal with it right at the end? Because I will need to touch on the issue of Moses Mabhida as well. Chairperson, so we're not really happy about the cash in transit. So we are very prudent. We will be looking at what contribution we will make in terms of that. At the same time, we are investigating. By the way, I've met with the head of the Hawks around the issue of cash in transit as well. We have discussed in full that there are real concerns, and I wanted to know what they are doing. There is indeed some work that they are doing with it. And I've also voiced my concern in regard to some of the cash in transit, because it doesn't look from where we're sitting that there is adequate kind of planning in terms of the movement of money, where it, you know, it doesn't seem like there is enough escorts and so on and so on. So we're looking at those kind of things, including some allegations that perhaps some of these things are actually pre-planned or stuff like that. So we're looking at that, Chairperson. I don't want to say much about it, but we, in the main, we are looking at it. There is also some specific complaints that we've received around the issue of cash in transit. So we are working to investigate whether there's full compliance with all the laws, from either the arms conventions, the standards of the vehicle, the training and the accreditation, as well as what needs to be done from the Reserve Bank side. I'm not privy to talk about the company involved, but until we're done with the investigation, Chairperson. But there is something that we're doing about the issue of cash in transit. Chairperson, on the issue of the review, I've just lost it here. Okay. Can I just come back to that issue, Chairperson? Maybe deal with the issue of the three research that we are, will be doing in 2018-19. Chairperson, we've already identified three topics. And the topics in the 2018-19 will be the labor broking aspect in the private security industry, which is a major, major problem because of the most of the non-compliance, in fact, in the private security industry is due to that kind of practice. So we'll be zooming into that. By the way, there's a number of things that we've done over the past years, including influencing the change in regulations and the sectoral determinations around trying to cap the issue of labor broking in the in this industry. The last we have done is we've participated in the High Court kind of case, which came in favor of getting rid of this practice. Unfortunately, each time it looks like practitioners find a way of actually subverting the law in terms of that. But there is something that we're doing about it, Chairperson. And we are also looking at the car watch industry. We'll be looking at going into that full steam research into that sector to determine, because there is a need for regulation. So we get sporadic complaints of some of the breaking into cars and non-compliance is due to the non-regulation of these people. But I must say, Chairperson, there's a lot that we've done in terms of that area. But we're not getting to the crux of it. We have arrested quite a lot of people, and it happens almost every time. But the real people that are involved here, we're really not getting to them. So we are looking at actually influencing change in regulation so that we can deal with the property management companies that look after those spaces and so on and so on, because they're the ones who are contracting those people. We're also looking, Chairperson, into the manufacturing of security equipment. Chairperson, maybe this partly answers the question from Honorable Mbele about what are the use of security equipment. You will see, Honorable Mbele, that section that you were referring to is under the Section 35 that gives the Minister the powers to make certain regulations. There is also a section that deals with the firearms specifically. It's not only the one that deals with the equipment. So, Chairperson, we are zooming into that. In fact, as I speak, our team is busy consulting the stakeholders to ensure that there is a draft regulations into the use of certain equipment, including the use of firearms. But on the firearms, Chairperson, we are quite very prudent because, rightfully so, we do not have a mandate in terms of the Firearms Control Act. Our mandate in terms of Section 35 only restricts us to controlling the issuing, the use, and the possession. So in terms of the licensing, SAPS will be able to do the licensing, but we will be looking at whether or not a security officer should possess a certain firearms in what place and so on. So we will be working with stakeholders. In terms of the SAPS Act, the minister, I think, and the commissioner do have the rights to declare certain areas as gun-free areas, areas such as ranks, areas such as most, the law state clearly. So we, for us to be able to come around these regulations in order to control this thing, these items, we will need you know, the collaboration of all the stakeholders. We have already discussed it. In fact, we're working on it with the previous MINMEC. The minister has given us the mandate to actually go into look into that area in a view to reduce the issue of taxi violence as well because of the danger that it poses to commuters. So those three areas is areas that we're looking into, Chairperson. And I think there's other areas that we're looking into going out in the outlying years, which we'll talk about later. Those three research. Maybe also to highlight, I think the chairperson mentioned the issue about the training academy, but he touched on it from an external point of view. From an internal point of view, chairperson, we are a law enforcement agency, but we are not having adequate kind of training for our law enforcement personnel. So everyone who actually plays in that space, we plan to have an internal part of the academy where we will be training inspectors before they actually get deployed out there. Currently, we are sourcing most of our inspectors from our colleagues, entities like SAPS. Most of our inspectors are people who are formerly police officers, correctional officers, members of the defense. So we want to be able to train them specifically in terms of our regulations and our act. So that's what we're focusing in on. Of course, also do the entire training for everyone else. The issue of identity fraud, what are we doing about it, Chairperson? There's a lot that we're doing about it. One is that we have partnered with Department of Home Affairs currently, where we have created a link, an automated link. You will recall that we are rolling out new certificates with much more security. The reason for that was to actually deal with the issue of identity fraud. Chairperson, it is a very painful exercise because it requires security officers to go in queue, long queues in our offices. At times they don't understand that, but we are dealing with it. Home Affairs is assisting us to verify who are the citizens. And most of those people that have stolen the identities of others, Chairperson, do not come forward. Instead, what they then do is to go and we've actually discovered a trend which is quite very disturbing, which we are currently investigating. Security officers that are legitimately in possession of our certificates will come to our offices in queue to get a new certificate. Then they go to places like Sunnyside. They go and sell that certificate to people who want to enter the industry but would otherwise not qualify. So he will be in possession of a copy of his ID, a new certificate from CIRA. So we said basically they sell their own identity. There's one or two cases that we are investigating. So the pressure that we have is not only, Chairperson, our certificate to renew it costs 20 rands, but we are told that they sell the entire package with about 4,000 rands. So if you want a job in the private security industry, there are people who then go and sell his own identity for 4,000 rand, which is which is unacceptable. So we are dealing with those matters. But what we are also doing, we are requesting, we've written to Home Affairs.
Just a moment, Chucky, on Bill of follow-up, you're welcome.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry to interrupt the director on that, but just a quick follow-up. Can I be reminded if it's possible for a private security officer to be licensed outside of being in the employ of a firm or a company? I know that in your database you link officers to firms to make sure that information matches, but is it possible for somebody to get registered and certified as an officer outside of being employed by a particular company?
Thank you, Hon.
Yes, Chairperson, it is possible. It is possible, but that is the practice that we are currently discouraging. And unfortunately, the law is such that it doesn't prohibit anyone from working as a consultant, and that's what we're actually looking at capping in the future. So I was just saying that we currently have written to Home Affairs to give us a live kind of extension. Currently, our link with Home Affairs is limited to our offices, Chairperson. So we are wanting to deploy these scanners, which will be mobile, with our inspectors to be able to verify security officers out there on site, whether they are citizens, whether they've stolen their identity. So that's, we're working on that one as well. So there's quite a lot that we're doing, and I must say that we are prosecuting quite a lot of people in terms of dealing with those ones. The use of DOCS, let me clarify, Chairperson. As a regulator, we also mandated to accredit institutions that train DOCS. We also mandated to accredit security companies that use DOCS. Obviously, we're looking at also utilizing this accreditation in line with also applicable legislations. There is a new review of, I think, legislation that deals with the use of animals and performing animals. I think it came into Operation Chairperson in December of 2016, if I'm not correct. So we accredit those who train these dogs, we accredit those who use these dogs. There's a lot that needs to be complied with in terms of the use of dogs, including the transportation, the taking care of the dogs. We sometimes partner in many of our operations with the SPCSA in terms of doing the inspections. The reason we also researched it is to enable us to establish a fully-fledged unit within CIRA that will be solely focused on the use of animals in terms of their training, in terms of their taking care of, in terms of their use, and so on and so on. So that is something that is we're looking at. But currently we use other experts to be able to do that work.
Just a moment, the Honourable Markey, is the Honourable Molobatsi as well? Yeah, Honourable Markey, just one option, Honourable Molobatsi.
Yeah, just a follow-up as a matter of interest. I don't even know what the language to use. I mean, if a dog is trained, it means it receives some sort of qualification. That is the right term. So is there a standard qualification, meaning that the one that is used in SAPS will be same qualifications with whoever is using that was the gist of the question. That's why I asked, whom do you use? How do you inspect the dogs? Thank you, Shepherd.
Thank you, Honourable Markey. Honourable Molobatsi.
Yeah, my question was on how do you transport them, seeing that they are only transported in specific vehicles. Number one. Number two, I also asked about the dog handlers. Tell us how do you go about this? Because they must have dog handlers. Not anybody can handle a trained dog, for instance.
Thank you very much, members. Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. There is indeed a specific kind of training. Maybe let me start with Honourable Michael's question. There are standards. We've got regulations that deals with the training of dogs as well as the training of dog handlers. And what we are seeking to do right now is to beef up those standards in terms of we want to be able to register the dogs themselves so that so dogs were not previously registered, but there is a requirement that they are trained. And these trainers, there will be a profile of the training of the specific dog and so on, and it's an identity. So we are trying to up that standard. In terms of the training of the dog handlers, there's dog handler one, level one up to level five. So the specific levels of them. And normally when a dog handler is trained, the dog that is used for training is the dog that he will handle, you know, throughout his career with that dog, up until the dog is replaced, if maybe the dog is put down and so on and so on. So there is a particular standard, and there are regulations in terms of that. So what we're seeking to do is to enhance that. I'm not sure if I've answered the... In terms of the transportation of dogs, Chairperson, yes, there's a specific term that is used for those vehicles. I think they use they call them cables, the cages where the dogs need to be transported. There is a standard as well. There is regulations that detail how they must be transported and under what circumstances, how they must be fitted and how they must be taken care of. So we actually pursue those standards vigorously when we do inspections as well.
Thank you. Follow up, Honourable Kalabana, and then Honourable Molobatsi.
I have found, and I revealed a whole awful situation in Durban where... The SAPS dogs were fine, but the Metro Police dogs were treated by a particular female administrator. They were listed as the equivalent of a filing cabinet or a chair. And when she decided, they've hit their worn-out date, she ordered that the police officer who had trained the dog from a puppy and virtually lived with the dog for 6 years instructed that that officer take the dog to the SPCA and have it destroyed. She would not allow them to be taken home because you're not allowed to take home office equipment. And needless to say, she's been fired, but this is the sort of thing I hope that you also, you know, it's fine, yes, they're transported like this, this is the humanity of the situation. Please don't ever let someone find out that a security company is in some way abusing their dogs, starving. I found dogs starving in official kennels. But it was too aggressive for the handler who used to hit it, and so now he doesn't go to it, and it just sits there and pines away in a cage that size, this enormous dog. So be careful in that you're not so focused on the transporting and regulations and how you may and what time and what, and you forget about the actual humanity link, because it's very important. It can jump up. I'm telling you now, it can become a very bad situation for any of the companies you oversee if they are found to be mistreating, and next thing the SPCA is called in and there's headlines everywhere and everyone will turn around and look at you and say, why didn't you do something? So don't, just a word of warning, it's happened. If it can happen in a metro police service, if government can pay for a woman to say, rip a dog out of the arms of a guy, a 6'3" man weeping, ordered to go and have his dog destroyed, it can happen in private security companies.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mulabachi.
Yeah.
Still on the dogs and the transportation. Are you saying Sarah is going to insist on security companies having these vehicles to transport the dogs? Because I'll tell you why I'm insisting. I've seen security guards just jumping from a vehicle with the dog, just jumping away in the same area, you know, just jumping with them, and that's why I'm so persistent. Thanks, Chef.
Member, let's go to the director.
Jefferson, maybe also addressing the comment by Honourable Kola Barnard as well as Honourable Mlebat. Indeed, the type of complaints that we're dealing with are actually similar complaints, where we get complaints about the abuse of dogs, and we investigate those complaints in conjunction with the SPCA, and we deal with those service providers. In regard to the transportation, Jefferson, there is no exception for any security service provider, as far as I recall what the law says. They need to transport them as specified in terms of the law. So those are typical cases which we need to investigate and deal with them and punish those providers in case where we find them. Can I just also address other questions? There was a question about the review, Chairperson, which I think the Chairperson asked, about are we going to be reviewing the issue of events and so on. Chairperson, indeed, I think given this type of incidents, in fact, it's not even the first time. You will recall that there is a specific act that deals with that. And the act is called the Safety and Security Recreational Recreational Events Act. That act specifies the role of CIRA, and unfortunately the role is not so much very, very active, if I may to say, in that, because it makes provision for the establishment of an event safety and security planning committee, but in that committee, CIRA is nowhere in that committee. But what then it requires the committee to do is to send a details of the security service providers that will be utilized at a specific event, and depending on the ranking of that event, there's quite very two important critical kind of sections there which deals with the ranking of the events, ranking of the high risk event, which is where it requires the committee to send an application, I think, to through the National Commission of Police within 60 days prior to that event. So we need to look at whether those things have been complied with, specifically the role of private security industry, whether in those plannings the role of private... So, but adequately to come to the answer, yes, we'll be looking at what role can we play actively in terms of dealing with these issues. But most events we are involved, and specific to this one, which I may come back to later, we are investigating this specific one as well, in Moses Mabida one, Chairperson. And also to correct the security officer that was being kicked, there is a female security officer, it's not a male security officer. Mm. And she is currently in hospital and very critical, yes. She's a female, yes.
Honourable Karabahan, follow up on the response, thank you.
But with all the chaos of the reporting on that matter, one moment it was a female being kicked, then she was dead, then she was not dead, then she was a man, and in one particular report she was both a man and a woman.
Yes.
He was terribly injured in the head, but she'll be fine, she's taken to ICU. It was utter chaos. I've never seen such appalling reporting, so absolutely for people to imagine it was this, but I also believed it was a female.
Thank you for that, Honourable Member. Let's go to the other responses, Director. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will need to deal with also the question of the gender issues within the private security industry. Currently, we've got 30% represented by the female, and we are seeing a shift in terms of the involvement of female colleagues in the private security industry. But Chairperson, it's something that we need to be looking into. I think the research that we've done into the transformation of the industry, which we have produced a discussion document, the Chairperson, I think Chairperson alluded to it earlier on, that we will be following up later in the end of 2018 and 19 financial year. So yes, in terms of what needs to be done to actually elevate the participation of women in the private security industry. Currently it's about 30%. I'm not sure. I hope I've dealt with it adequately, Chairperson. The other issue was regarding why, I think the CFO will deal with that, the issue of the internal audits.
Okay. Thank you. The issue of why are we outsourcing internal audit, we have looked inside, we assessed the capacity and the governance requirement. However, what we did, we have appointed an internal audit firm for 3 years. And during when the old organizational design and review, would be able to capacitate the entity to do a transfer of skills, learning from the internal audit firm. But in the next 3 years, we're hoping that we'll be ready to have our in-house internal audit firm. The issue of traveling management, yes, we wanted to outsource the travel management service. We looked at also our skills inside. We need capacity, and for us to have a capacity, we should follow the same process of job evaluation, structure approval. But it's something that we are looking at in future, that we can have an internal capacity to manage our traveling, but we are not ready yet. But it's something that we have, we are looking at in the future. Maybe must have to everything. And the issue about the personnel budget, as indicated, that our personnel budget has increased by 21%. It's due to we want to capacitate our core. We want to fill 15 positions, and we have existing interns that we want to also use to assist service delivery. So in all, it's 20 million that we anticipating that will be added on the current personnel budget. If you remember, the chairperson and the director, they indicated that we've got one is to 120, and then one into 6.8. So we really need to put some capacity to ensure that we address the ratio. And then on the issue of why did we, the budget decreased, the communication program 3 budget. Program 3 budget has had this year, the 51, it was mainly because we had a big project this financial year, transformation project. So the project gone and we spent almost 8 million. So if you look at the general trend of increase, it moved from 29 to 51. It's now back to 42. So it's normal trend. That we also had adverts, and then we also had a project of rolling out of certificate. So we're no longer rolling out because we are there now. So we now going back to the normal trends. Because if you look at the previous year and this year that has passed, it was 29 and jumped to 51, double. So we're going back to the normal one. And why the issue of overdraft? We, in terms of GRAP 104, financial instruments, we have non-cash item. I didn't want to be technical, but let me just... the last part of the financial information is non-cash items. It's the items that are prescribed by the GRAP legislation. So when you have assets, you depreciate them and they will reduce over time. And then when you have debtors, employee costs, in terms of GRAP 19, you have to provide. Provision means when you have debtors, when you have employee costs, leave. So you assume that if you close today, are you going to be able to pay your debt? So if you have an employee, I'll make one example about one employee. If you have an employee earning, let me say 30,000, so that I'm able to equate it for 30 days. And if you close down 15 days before the financial year, you have to pay that person for the 15 days. So you make an assumption that if you close down today, will you save those inherent non-cash items? So the provision we provided for debtors, we provide for employee benefit. And then on the overdraft also, when you project, when I started the presentation, we said we have that disparity thing. So it's a projected budget. So we must manage that we don't fall into an overdraft. So maybe something that this committee should look at, that we don't have the overdraft. But when we did our costing, it indicated that we have that overdraft. But we planning to intensify our collection and our revenue. So we must over-collect, so that we deal with the projected overdraft. It's not an actual overdraft.
Maybe if you can just pause there. Members, we're going to take a 10-minute break. I don't know whether there's a second tea available, but let's 10 minutes, and then we come back for the other responses. Thank you.
No.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for joining us. We're going to continue with our responses from the honorable members' questions. So back to the director and his team. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of the reserve, whether we are building any reserve and whether we are actually looking at that, that is something that we are currently doing on an ongoing basis, Chairperson. But however, we do not have adequate reserves right now to be able to build and invest. But because the model that we're using, we're not getting an allocation. So whatever comes to us, we make sure that we plan adequately from a cash flow point of view on that. So the reserve, yes, will be built in future as and when we get enough cash to do so. Chairperson, there was also a question around our interaction with subs.
Mr. Chowkey, Honourable Markey, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to understand, are there any funds or from the revenue that you collect that you take to Treasury, or absolutely nothing that goes to Treasury?
Thank you.
Chairperson, we are not receiving any cent from Treasury, and we are not taking any cent so far to the Treasury. And in terms of the Treasury regulations, every year we would have to ask permission for Treasury to retain funds if we have any funds that are... You will recall that in the previous years we had surpluses, and unfortunately, as we've already said, the funding model that we have has come to its life end, and therefore we are beginning now to post deficits. Even we are also predicting a deficit this year, so we will need to reinvent ourselves in terms of the funding model. But we've already said we began with the process, Chairperson. So yeah, no, there is nothing that we're taking to Treasury currently.
So just to clarify, previously when I made a surplus
go
to Treasury? No. So all it has stayed is we've got no link.
No. It will always stay with us, Chairperson, because we're not receiving anything, so we're from cash to... Yes. Chairperson, in terms of the relationship we have a very good relationship with SAFS, Chairperson, in terms of, we also have a memorandum of understanding in terms of how we assist each other on training issues, investigations, and so on. We do not currently have a very good one with NPA directly. It's something that we've been trying to to get. Unfortunately, the diaries has not been coming together, but I must say that I have met several times with the head of NPA, and he understands the role that we play, and we will be talking about making time to ensure that, you know, we can assist in particular the prosecutors about understanding our environment and being able to assist them how to actually look at the evidence differently, because what we find out there in the field is that we do the work. Remember that we don't do the entire investigation, because in most cases we are the complainant. So we'll do the investigation and then hand it over to SAPS. But when it gets to the prosecution, we find that people are given admission of guilt and so on. But if you look at what the law says, the law makes provision for lengthy, up to 2 years imprisonment, and a person is given admission of guilt of 10,000 and he walks away with a very serious crime that is committed. So those are the issues that we want to try to address. Also, if you look at our Act, Chairperson, it makes provision for us issuing Section 56 notices. So we think that if we implement that, it will actually fast-track the issue of compliance. Section 56 actually makes provision for you to have powers to arraign a person to court. And basically, if I were to use the loose language that we use out there, your normal speed tickets that you get there are actually Section 56 notice. So we will be giving you the notice to go and appear to court or pay a particular fine on the spot, or pay it at offices and so on. So we want to activate that as well to ensure that people are able to quickly respond to compliance issues. I think we're looking at improving that relationship with the NPA. Chairperson, I thought there was quite a lot of interest on the issue of the training of security officers in regard to events, maybe to go a little bit deeper into that, to share with you what the curriculum says in terms of the training. There is a specialized regulation that we published at CIRA in 1998 that deals with events training specifically, and these regulations were published before the new Act, the SAFRIA Act, that came into, but it does complement that Act. In fact, also that Act complements these regulations. We have also something I've forgotten to mention earlier on. Among the research that we've done research already in the events space of the private security industry. So much of what we will be coming up with in terms of amendments and the review of that space will be based on that research as well. Currently, the curriculum is as follows, Chairperson. There are about five modules that they need to be doing in specialized training. The first module deals with the public relations. The second one deals with bombs, explosive devices, and firearms. So, and there are certain outcomes that should come out of the training. The third one deals with firefighting, prevention, and protection. The fourth module deals with the two-way radio communication. Basically, that deals with the communication aspects of their training. Then the other one deals with legal aspects. And then there's another one that deals with occupational safety and first aid. And there's another one that deals with access control. And there's another module, in fact, there's about eight modules, that deals with searches, procedures, and techniques, Chairperson. And then there's different kind of outcomes that deals with that. But if you look at the category required to register, it also must deal with any person who forms part of the field control and crowd control team at special events. So this is the only piece of legislation, Chairperson, that seeks to be allowing security officers to be involved in crowd management, but specifically at events, specialized events. So perhaps what we need to be looking much more focus is the type of training that they receive. I must say that currently we do not have an accredited training that deals with crowd management in the private security industry space. The reason for that, although there is training that has been provided, it is because that space was solely legally reserved for the police to do in terms of the Gatherings Act So we are seeing quite an increase. You would recall, Chairperson, that we did talk about it last year when the issue of the fees must fall came, that we are looking at that kind of training being developed in the industry. So I think that is, and as far as that is concerned, Chairperson, the issue of, I've already highlighted the focus of our involvement, how we'll be assisting. In fact, I've been informed by my team that we are expecting the first preliminary draft report on our side in respect of that event. So I suppose that it will be the report giving us an overview of what really happened, who are the people who were identified, whether there's been adequate, what was the participation of private security industry in that specific event. And the details to follow, I think, later, Chairperson.
I just want, maybe just for interest sake, so for any extraordinary event or public event like that, it's normal, like a normal soccer match or cricket match, there won't be specific grading or specific training related official from the private security that will be deployed. It will be just security staff, you know, in terms of the agreement, say, with the soccer stadium or the events management.
Chairperson, as it is right now, the training that the regulations makes provision for is generalized kind of training on events. Perhaps we need to start talking about this focus on the specific kind of sporting events, because they've got different kind of activities and the way that they are arranged, like the cricket is different from soccer, and as well as the stadiums differ and so on. But currently, it's just one regulation that deals with, in general, all those regulations. But we are aware, Chairperson, that since these regulations were published, there's a lot of improvement that the service providers themselves have done in terms of training people, because obviously on the issue of the health and safety, there's a lot of changes that have happened since these regulations were published. So the outcomes that are here, there are actually more outcomes now than it was before.
There's two, Honourable Kalibana, Honourable Mulabatsi. Follow-ups?
Watching that footage from the soccer in Durban, it seemed clear to me that those security officers had zero training. They did not know how to cope. And it wasn't a large group that invaded the pitch. It was maybe 30 people came down. And, I mean, to see security people picking up a chair and throwing it at a person, what is that? It just seemed to me that there was, they had no idea about crowd control, which I would have thought was, you know, a basic. Certainly they should have been able to handle the firefighting if they've done the modules, because there were fires being set in the stands. But I didn't see any of them on radios. I didn't see, there was no control. It was simply security people being attacked in the middle of the field by a bunch of people, and not a huge crowd. And they were totally out of their depth. They did not know how to deal with it. They didn't know how to control it. And you saw what happened to that woman. Certainly the people who came to her assistance with the stretcher and everything, I'm guessing, were a standby ambulance crew, as is at every match by law. They came, they dealt with it very quickly. But really, you can't have security people picking up a chair and throwing it in the hopes that it's going to do what? I have no idea. But if that's part of their training, I'd really like to know. And secondly, having seen that you're looking at certain in-house training, just be very careful with, do you have the right to train, to give someone a qualification certificate, etc.? We had this ridiculous situation in the SAPS where they announced they were going to launch a university. And they had never read up, they didn't even know what it took to launch a university, but they announced it. And it was an absolute foofy. It was a lie. It was a fabrication. So if you're going to be doing training, make sure it's CETA approved or somehow approved, that what you give the people who go through the trading have something that when they go to another employer, they're not going to just laugh and say, what is that rubbish? So, yeah, I'm interested in what steps you've taken in that regard.
Thank you. Honorable Mulabasi.
Yeah, Chairperson, you, the use of alcohol in these sporting facilities is a huge problem. I know for a fact that it's not allowed, but it still enters the sporting facilities in one form or another, in squeeze bottles and so on. Are you considering a way of checking what is contained in these squeeze bottles or something, or will you be taking it too far? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mushlungu, on same issue,
you're welcome. No, thanks. What I wanted to find out is, normally in these big events like soccer event or whatever, clearly, the, for example, in Mabida Stadium, there is a management there, which is headed, I think, by Mr. Masbu. When they plan for any event to take place, do you get involved directly as sitter, or as sitter you give certain specifications to be met by whoever that will be contracted in to render security services? The reason, Chairperson, I'm raising this is because Honorable Caller Barnett was raising, without clearly defined standards to be met by whoever gets contracted in from the service providers, I don't think that we'll be able, Chairperson, to deal with that particular problem anyway in the future. Because as Honorable Maga raised the point earlier on, police definitely will be second respondents, not necessarily first respondents, because in the whole scheme of things, those people at the forefront are those that have got a direct monetary interest in terms of contractual obligation agreed to between the host and them as service providers. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Om Shungu, Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Caller Barnett, the comments on the Moses Mabhida incident, Chairperson, on my side will be limited to what I've already said our involvement will be. Unfortunately, I cannot cast any aspersions in terms of the training or the lack thereof of security officers or how they reacted. We all know that it is a very unfortunate situation. But let us wait for the investigation to take place and let's see what really ought to have happened. One I can say is that the center of the whole incident, perhaps from the regulations point of view, is the safety and security plan that ought to have been approved. That is at the center of everything. So the investigation will tell us what really happened there. But of course, in terms of training, Chairperson, again, the law is quite very clear what they ought to know and what they ought to have known. Whether indeed they were trained, it's something that the investigation will reveal. In terms of the use of alcohol and whether we should stop that, Chairperson, again, our role as a regulator is quite very limited. We do not participate in the searches ourselves. If we're at stadiums, most of the games, Chairperson, we are there. Most of the games, most of the big games, we are informed because the law requires all the bodies that get involved, like USAFA, to inform us. We are there. I know that we deal quite very actively with Stadium Management South Africa. They involve us most of the steps and in most of the incidents where they are. There is quite very few events, incidents, except the last one that we've had. So I think the other question was, do we, to what extent do we get really get involved, Honorable Mhlongo? Unfortunately, as I said, when you look at the act that I referred to earlier, the SASRIA Act, it says that the planning committee has to send to us details of the service provider. That's how far it relates to us. For us to deal with compliance. But we've taken it a step further. As part of our stakeholders, we've engaged quite a lot of bodies that are involved in sports, in SAFA and all of them, in terms of making sure that they are aware of our requirements, what we do. In fact, at one stage, I received a call on a Saturday that there's a game that was about to take place at Ellis Park. It was a rugby game, and that there were security officers that were clearly foreign nationals and had known nothing. I issued an instruction that they must be arrested and removed from that stadium, and that actually did happen. So we get involved actively from that point of view. And at times we visit these sporting games and see whether there is compliance or not. In terms of the planning itself, we are not involved. Even if you look at the composition of the planning committee, legally we're not there, Chairperson. I stand to be corrected, but it doesn't seem that we are part of that, because the authority there refers to the municipal authority that's involved in hosting that kind of event, as opposed to SIDA. Thank you.
Acting Chairperson, you're welcome.
Maybe the Chairperson and Honourable Members, SIDA is a question that we'd like to pose to the Portfolio Committee, that the issues that relate to the loss of lives in these events, are they a national crisis that warrants now attention of everyone that is involved, either SAPS, either SIRA, people who plan? The reason I'm raising this is because it is not for the first time that we're seeing such a tragedy or witnessing such a tragedy. It happened in Orkney some years ago, Ellis Park, and even few others. Lives have been lost, and we do get heated up, and then weeks later forgotten, we move on with our lives. And probably the time has come that we start now really asking ourselves whether the mechanisms that are in place, are they working to protect the lives or not. And this is not only a certain problem. I've witnessed in England the same problems, in Russia recently, So these are issues that probably as a nation we need to start to take seriously. And my worry time is that we get bogged down by policies, limited power that we have, and we fail to address the small issues, because these are ordinary people who get affected at the end of the day, and we easily forget about them. And I was a bit worried when I was listening to the radio when I heard the president of SAFA, Dr. Khoza, and the Minister of Sports contradicting themselves around the issue of the SASRIA Act in terms of how should it be scaled up or not. So these are issues that as a citizen, I'm very worried about. And the fact that one is the acting chair of one of the entities, you know, people get asked by families, what do you do? In fact, people think that SASRIA were the ones who employed those people who couldn't do their job, you know. And my kids look at me and say, you are useless, you guys. You know? So that's a concern I want to raise, Chairperson.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is it's, if you look at other international incidents, also that one incident in England, there was a commission of investigation where a lot of people were killed in that incident a number of years ago. So, again, it's the role of the sport federations, everybody, and look at the international examples, what was the recommendations, what can be done. So I think, again, every incident like this actually teach us to again review our best practice, what can be done to ensure that we keep stability, we keep the peaceful gathering of people, and what is the role of the different role players. So I think it's really a wake-up call again. Any such event, you know, policymakers, parliamentarians, everybody, we must say, well, this happened, what can be done, what is missing in this? So I think it's a constant learning curve. But I think all institutions got a responsibility to review their own roles. So thanks for that.
Thank you very much. Yes, Director.
Chairperson, there's two more questions that I need to answer. There was a question about the footprint in Mpangeni, why specifically Mpangeni. Chairperson, we've looked at KZN. If you look at the one of the busiest offices at CIRA is Johannesburg and KwaZulu-Natal as well as Pretoria office. And unfortunately, because of the makeup and the funding issues, we only have only one office in all of those areas that I've mentioned. Devon is one of the busiest offices that we have. It caters for the entire KZN. So we looked at the numbers and where people actually come from and the kind of allocation of security officers in KZN, and we then identified Mpangeni or Richards Bay as would be the central place to look after people who come from the north of KZN. That is the reason why we, unfortunately, we've been trying to get an office there for 2.5 years now. And we hired staff a long time ago in planning for those, and we are now re-advertising again. In fact, we have already re-advertised. We are going to deviate because we've tried 3 times now to try to get an office. We couldn't. We advertised, no space. Where we got the space, and by the time we finished the procurement process, the space have already been taken, unfortunately. We had yesterday a protest in our Devon office, specifically people protesting for long queues, Chairperson. So it has become quite a very painful issue. We are going to be looking at that very closely to see if we can fast-track that process. The same with Bloemfontein. You will recall that we came to this house and we announced that we are opening an office, and then 3 years, 2 years down the line, it hasn't been opened because of the procurement processes. Each time you procure, you don't get space and space and space. But eventually we are opening an office in Bloemfontein next week. Finally, everything has been done. We are opening. So that is it. Chairperson, there was a question about whether we are working with the civilian secretariat in terms of developing regulations. I must say that in the past, the relationship was not that very close. We have actually worked very, since the appointment of the current civilian secretariat, we're working very closely with them. So as we do the researches, we come up with policies. If they're going to impact on national policies, we then share with them, because the Act requires us to advise the minister on the changes, mainly in terms of the Act and the regulations. Of course, is the minister that publishes those regulations. So yes, we do work with them very close in terms of those areas.
Thank you very much. That is all the questions. Yeah. Members, any follow-ups before we break for tea and also for the sitting this afternoon? Please. Yeah. So we'll have a joint tea, yes. Yes. You.
Chairperson, with humbleness, can I be reminded first I left it out?
Yes.
Chairperson, in our regulations, the Code of Conduct makes provision for an employer to provide a security officer with adequate protective gear for his... So that is something that it is there. But unfortunately, in that setup where the stadium is, and particularly the incident that you saw on TV, what would have actually... required the kind of protection there. First of all, we assume, as we are, that there was an adequate risk assessment in terms of the scheduling of that game, because the Act says that there needs to be that game, every event needs to be scheduled, whether it's high risk, medium risk, or... So if it was high risk, it needs to be scheduled. And of course, in terms of what needs to be... The gear and so on needs to be... Unfortunately, firearms are not allowed in that space, except in the possession of the police. So how the, you know, let's allow the investigation again to determine how they could have best dealt with that moment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions, members? Thank you very much. Honourable members, also thank you very much to the board members as well as the director and his team for briefing us. Of course, we will now study the responses, and we will in due course in the committee adopt our report on the APP. So thank you very much. We wish you well. Thank you very much, members. I just want to remind those members who maybe missed the first minute of the meeting, we'll meet tomorrow at 9, but we're not going to deal with the budget reports. The staff are still busy with the first draft, so they won't be ready this week. So we'll only deal tomorrow morning with the A-list. We'll receive a briefing from the Secretariat and the SAP's legal drafting team, and then we'll deal with that. So tomorrow's meeting won't be the whole morning, probably 30 minutes or less. Baba, where are we meeting? Yeah. Right, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Everybody is invited to tea and cookies. Thank you.
Thank you.